Hello and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to listen to the podcast. Go to covertnerd.net for all the details and ways you can get in touch with me, past episodes, social media links, and anything that's mentioned in the podcast will be at covertnerd.net. Also, if you like the podcast, please subscribe. That way you're notified when a new episode comes out. You can pretty much subscribe on any podcasting app that you like. Without further ado, let's dive right into the episode and nerd it up. Okay, we have Tim again from Rainbow Comics to talk about what Tim claims is maybe one of the best comics maybe ever.
It's up there.
Yeah. It's up there. Top five.
Time's going to tell.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the best comics I've read in the last 5 years. I mean, I say that, it feels like I say that a lot because there's been a lot of good stuff with Hickman's X-Men, going back to what Tom King and Clay Mann did in Heroes in Crisis. And even a lot of the indie books right now are just killing it. Like Everything Jeff Lemire's doing in Black Hammer. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to not acknowledge that I love those books. I mean, don't even mention like Elephant Men, which still to this day is my favorite ongoing series. But as far as, event comics, or let's even narrow it down to like superhero comics, Batman Three Jokers is a book that I've been waiting for since the end of the New 52 from DC. Geoff Johns ended his run on Justice League with the Darkseid War, and the artist on that was Jason Fabok, who really nobody had really heard of too much until he did like an arc that was before that. It was the Amazo Virus, and just the way he drew was kind of reminiscent of like Jim Lee, but like if Jim Lee didn't exist in the 90s and like came out like now, is kind of the vibe that I get from Jason Fabok. It's very dynamic and very big and very not realistic, but like comic book realistic.
Would you say over the top maybe, or not over the top?
I would say it skirts the edge of over the top, but it looks exactly like if I were to tell you to just like picture Batman in your brain, just like picture like not a specific kind of Batman, but just Batman to you. I don't want to bring to mind like the animated series or the Adam West Batman, just the nebulous concept of Batman. And to me, that's what Jason Fabok draws. Just like the quintessential Batman.
It's I would say very Jim Lee-ish, but I guess we should preface the listener. We're probably going to spoil this.
Well, we're definitely going to
spoil it. Definitely going to spoil all over it. But the Joker obviously is iconic to Batman. Mm-hmm. I mean, he goes back to, let's see, the first time he appears was Batman, April 25th, 1940. So we're talking about a villain that's 80 years old.
Are you including the Red Hood? Because I want to say, I don't think it was in Detective 27, but I think one of the very first villains has been retconned to being the Joker.
Yeah.
I don't think it was originally intended that Red Hood would be the Joker. But
you're right. Technically,
excuse me, I need to push my glasses up. Push your glasses up. I'm sorry, Lee, but actually, no.
I guess asterisk, the first time we see the Joker, the white face, the red, the green hair.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
No. But so he's a very old villain, and I didn't know this. He was only supposed to be a one-off. He was supposed to show up in Batman number one and die and not reappear again. But some editors said, no, we kind of want to keep him around. Bob Kane, Jerry Robinson, and Bill Finger, those are the three that helped create it.
Jerry Robinson. Like, everybody talks about Bill Finger, and they need to because Bill Finger did amazing work. And everybody knows Bob Kane's bombastic self. But Jerry Robinson, when you look at everything he brought to Batman, it's insane. And that's not today's topic.
Let's maybe diverge for a minute or two because I don't really know. What's some of the story behind Jerry?
Jerry Robinson, now you're putting me on the spot. Jerry Robinson, I want to say, ended up like Bill Finger defined the look of Batman, because Bob Kane notoriously had very bad ideas. And so Bill Finger is kind of responsible for the look of Batman as we know it. Jerry Robinson is more responsible for the world of Batman. Correct me if I'm wrong, and you may have to double check because I don't want to sound like a dummy. But I believe he came up with, I think he brought the Batcave into comics because I believe that was in the radio serial first. Mm-hmm. I want to say he brought in Alfred. Robin, I believe, was a Jerry Robinson thing. Catwoman was Jerry Robinson.
Oh, wow.
Please double check me
okay.
So I don't sound like an idiot and we can cut all this out if we have to. But I'm 95% sure that Jerry Robinson, again, Bob Kane, his name is forever associated with Batman. Bill Finger is definitely responsible for the look of Batman. And Jerry Robinson, I would say, is responsible for the world of that.
Yeah, because you just list those. Alfred, Robin, Catwoman, huge.
No, absolutely.
You wouldn't have it. And the whole idea behind the Joker was to give him a notorious reoccurring nemesis, kind mm-hmm. of like Moriarty's to Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the look of him, and I'll include a link in the show notes, the whole look and kind of iconic idea came from a 1928 film called The Man Who Laughs, inspired by the Hugo, I'm going to slaughter his name. I can't remember.
Victor Hugo.
There we go. Victor Hugo. And the actor that played in The Man Who Laughs was named Conrad Veidt, who had a disease that made him have a continuous smile on his face the whole time. And it is pretty eerie. And that's where the look came from. But there's always been a dispute with Bill Finger and Jerry Robinson on who actually came up with it.
Sure.
I'll include some notes in there. You can kind of read about it. But
Also, definitely just dig into Bill Finger and what he brought to Batman and Jerry Robinson. Like, it's worth your time to look into that history. Like, I'm not well versed enough to speak with authority on it, but yeah. it is incredibly interesting. I don't want to take away from Bob Kane, but he's notoriously more bombastic than creative.
Well, the three Jokers, as we talked about, that they bring in two iconic stories.
Mm-hmm.
The Joker from The Death in the Family, mm-hmm. who, if you don't know, killed Robin with the crowbar. And then The Killing Joke.
Killing Joke, where he crippled Barbara.
Crippled Barbara with the bullet. And I didn't realize this. I kind of forgot that the covers for Death in the Family, that was Mike Mignola.
Yes, Mike Mignola. Yeah,
yeah.
That's
I kind of forgot.
Well, and it was written by Jim Starlin.
Yes.
I really only know from his work with Thanos over at Marvel. I am not like for people who don't know, I love comics, and that's probably clear from my appearances on the show.
Yes,
but I am more of a modern comics fan. Like, we're talking like a post '80s bombastic '90s. modern era. So a lot of and my knowledge lies mostly with Marvel. That doesn't mean that I don't like DC. I just did a whole show with you where I talked about Stargirl,
yep,
and Starman and my love for those. So I'm not at all like, oh, Marvel's the best and DC's the worst, but just I happen to know more about Marvel. DC, I dig in a little bit, and the whole I've read Death in the Family. I love what Starlin did. I love the visuals that went along with that. I cannot think of the artist offhand.
That did Death in the Family?
Did Death in the Family.
You're
going to say it, I'm going to be like, that's it.
I can put it in there. Jim Aparo.
Jim Aparo, yes. So Aparo, Jim Aparo, when I think of Death in the Family, we've got Mignola covers. We've got Jim Starlin writing an amazing story. We've got Aparo drawing what is essentially the period-specific look of Batman and the Joker. We had a Joker with a very long face, a very like very angular features, and we had like Batman had like the longer ears, and it helped define Batman for, you know, people like Jason Fabok and people like Tony Daniel and the guys who were Jorge Jimenez. Oh my gosh. People who are drawing Batman right now for DC almost uniformly point at Aparo, and then, you know, they point at Aparo for what he brought visually to a modern Batman tale. And I honestly, I feel confident in saying what we're seeing with Three Jokers and Jason Fabok's work is going to define Batman moving forward. Jim Lee helped define the look for all of the DC Universe when the New 52 launched. Was that 10 years ago?
At least.
And I think for that time, with the, you know, we had the distinctive piping down the suits for everybody, and we've all kind of, like, as the books have gone on, kind of moved away from that. Like, if you look at Justice League, like the first arc of Justice League, which was called Origin in the New 52, which they turned into the movie Justice League War, the animated movie, everybody wore kind of plate armor, and it's kind of transitioned away from that, but the visual language that was established by Geoff Johns and Jim Lee in Justice League carried over through the New 52 into the Rebirth era, going into even like Doomsday Clock, and we saw how Batman and Superman looked in that. It has echoes going back to the New 52, and I honestly believe that the way Fabok has done everybody, like, he's drawn the best Batgirl I've ever seen, but the way he's visually represented everybody, and I don't know that we're going to start seeing it necessarily like in 2021 or anything, but I think the way he's drawn these characters is going to inform whoever's going to be drawing Batman in 10, 15 years.
Okay.
I think this is what people are going to go back to. They're going to say, I wanted to use Fabok's Batman or Fabok's Barbara or Fabok's Jason.
Okay.
I think we're seeing a very important pivot point in modern Batman.
Kind of passing of the torch
from
Aparo. And then I should mention that we also see the Joker from Batman the Killing Joke, which was Alan Moore and Brian Boland.
Oh my gosh, Brian Boland. excuse me, I have some dust on my shoulder. I'm Facebook friends with Richard Starkings, comic book letterer, and he writes Elephant Men. And I've had the privilege of speaking to him a couple of times, and I run a comic book store here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and actually was able to send Mr. Starkings Justice League short box that had all of the Justice League with Starro on their faces, and I believe that was a Boland piece. I'm not 100%, but Richard Starkings and I talked a little bit about how Brian Boland's work really just inspired him to be really better, because he was just kind of starting in the lettering business when The Killing Joke came out, and now, like, Richard Starkings' name is synonymous with comic book lettering. Sorry to get inside baseball,
no,
but that is a whole thing. And the fact that he is one of my all-time favorite writers now, and just the sweetest man on the face of the planet. He is such a great person. But to see the legacy that Brian Boland passed on to Richard Starkings, to Richard Starkings inspiring, I don't know, a silly little dweeb like me, I can draw a very specific line back to Boland. And honestly, I think what we're going to see, you're going to hear a lot of similarities, I think, from what I'm talking about in this episode to what I was talking about in the Stargirl episode. Because in Stargirl, the last time we talked, Stargirl as a character is all about legacy. And I think what Batman Three Jokers has done is carry on like a real world legacy of storytelling. And this is like the most pretentious thing I've ever said, but I stand behind it. Being able to see how comics were treated when Batman came out 80 years ago, to how comics were treated in the 70s when you had people like Neil Adams drawing Batman, and then in the 80s where we have Aparo, we have the 90s where we've got...
yeah, you have to have the night, of course, the iconic Nightfall.
So we have the 90s where we had multiple artist interpretations everywhere from like Scott McDaniel to we had Todd McFarlane on covers. We had Joe Quesada was doing stuff before he was over at Marvel. And we had more of an attitude adjustment. I mean, we're looking at a post-Frank Miller world.
Oh, yeah.
We had The Dark Knight Returns. We had Batman Year One. Moving into the 2000s. And we had just, like, ridiculous pouches and armor and, and all of this other junk. Now up into, you know, the 2010s and the 2020s, where we're seeing a more grounded, realistic look, when we have like Gary Frank, and we've got Jason Fabok, and we've got Jorge Jimenez.
And Jim Lee, you can throw him in there. Yeah, somewhat.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that person. and it's very, it's it, it, the history of comics and the history of Batman and the history of fandom and everything, you can draw a straight line. Like, you were talking about how the Joker was never really meant to be anything more than a one-off, and I would say nothing at that time was ever intended to be more than a one-off. There was nobody, like Bob Kane, bless his heart, as much as he loved Batman, he thought the pinnacle of Batman was when the movie came out in the 80s. And he was like, this is as big as Batman's ever going to get. And now cut to now, and you can't even fathom it. They didn't know 80 years ago that, you know, Batman fighting the Red Hood was going to have a direct impact on one of the best stories to come out in the year 2020. They had no idea. It's so crazy. It's so exciting. And it every time somebody mentions, oh my gosh, do you think the comic industry is in trouble? Like, because about every 10 years we have the same conversation, and we'll see ebbs and flows. And I've had a lot of people ask that recently. As we're recording this, there's a rumor, and I don't like to spread rumors, but there's a rumor that DC is letting go a lot of their employees on the administrative side, and people are lamenting the death of DC Comics, and it's too soon to call. And the legacy that DC has and just the pedigree extends far beyond anything that we can even put our minds on.
Well, yeah, and you have to understand that, yeah, this is, they're digging in with three Jokers. They're digging into classic pivotal moments in Batman lore.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine Jeff and who's the artist?
Jason.
Probably when they were young, when 88, 89, mm-hmm. when these two pivotal moments happened. And so drawing on those two pivotal points, because any Batman fan, any long-term Batman fan will know about those two. Now, they may not have grown up with that and wasn't a pivotal part of their childhood, but they have read it, I guarantee you.
Well, and even going into like The Dark Knight, like the film The Dark Knight,
sure.
Which we've all seen, draws heavily from my favorite graphic novel of all time. We've talked about this before, Batman: The Long Halloween.
Yeah.
That was written by Jeff Loeb, art by the amazing Tim Sale. I absolutely adore that. But, I mean, we have Hollywood looking at these and saying, this is a story worth telling. And I think there's some merit to that. One thing I love about Three Jokers is Three Jokers takes the idea that every version of the Joker you've ever seen is plausible, if mm-hmm. not already existing in the world.
Yeah.
So we have like the three main Jokers of the story, Three Jokers.
Oh yeah, the criminal, the comedian, and the clown.
And the idea of the criminal is that, and all of this is theoretical based on how the story is written and just based on the little snippets of clues that we have. But the criminal is more or less the original Joker. Like, this goes back to the Joker.
This is the 40s and 50s Joker.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a little bit older. He's been doing this for a very, very long time. We have the criminal. We had the comedian is the Joker that shot Barbara in The Killing Joke.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the clown is the one who killed Jason. He got better, but that's a whole other thing. And what we're seeing here is the criminal, the old Joker, is trying to define what would make the ultimate Joker. And how do we take the concept of what we as Jokers represent? How do we make the ultimate Joker that will define everything and tear Batman down from the very from his very core and just shake him to the point. Like, they don't necessarily want to kill him.
No.
They really want to mess with him.
That's, yeah, and that's the whole point behind this, and you'll see it at the end. But anyway, oh, continue.
For sure, for sure. I'm just going to, I don't know how to describe this without just going right into it.
Yeah.
So, Batman, we all know that Batman's parents were killed in the alley. We've seen it every time there's a cartoon or a movie or whatever. Yeah. We've seen it all before. The man who pulled the trigger is Joe Chill. And so this comic, it's so smart. We find out through the course of the story, and again, spoilers, this is your final spoiler warning, this is happening. Joe Chill feels guilt for what he did. He feels awful. But the Jokers are like, we need to go get Joe Chill. He killed Batman's parents. They definitely know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. Yeah. We don't need to get into that. But they do know, and that's just like a truth that you need to accept. Like, they know it, and of course they know it. But their whole idea is, let's get Joe Chill, and we're going to torture him until he completely breaks, and we're going to make him the pinnacle, because the only thing that none of these Jokers really have is a connection to Bruce Wayne. And not only does Joe Chill have a connection to Bruce Wayne, he has a connection to the defining moment of that. So when we find out that Joe Chill has nothing but guilt about killing Bruce Wayne's parents, it introduces a really interesting dynamic. In prison, he's written letters to Bruce Wayne. I don't know if he wrote them daily, but he has a stack of letters that he wrote to Bruce Wayne saying, this is the worst thing I could have ever done. I stole your entire life from you. I took your family from you. I deserve everything I'm getting and more. And he couldn't bring himself to send those letters, because like saying it out loud was something that it was just breaking him down. I'm actually kind of sad saying it. There's something to be said for, you know, we see a lot of villains in comics who are just cold-blooded killers, and they'll just do what they have to do. Like, the character shows up, kills the parents, and then just gets away or goes to jail or dies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is, I'd say, outside of, like, Mr. Freeze with the Heart of Ice thing, where we understand his love of his wife and why he's doing these awful things because it's the only way he can possibly save his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing here is remorse from somebody who's not trying to redeem themselves. Like, Joe Chill is not on a redemption arc.
No.
He's on very much a, I screwed up. I made a mistake. I made the biggest mistake of all time, and I need to own up to it. So we've got the Jokers break him out. They string him up. They torture him in order to break him. Batman, I'm cutting through so much. I'm not doing any of this justice.
We can back up if we have to. yeah, that's okay.
Batman rescues Joe Chill, and here's this man that caused every ounce of pain that Bruce Wayne's ever experienced, and he's literally got his hands on him. And we have a moment where he like rips off his cowl and he's like, I'm Bruce Wayne. And like, they're both like on the edge of like tears, basically. And Joe Chill, it's very clear Joe Chill's not gonna make it. And as like Joe
Chill, because he has cancer.
Yeah, he's got cancer, and I wanna say, I don't quite remember. It's been a minute since I've read that last issue. But I know for a fact that like Bruce Wayne ends up not forgiving 100%. Like, you don't, I don't know. I think as humans, it's very difficult to forgive what Joe Chill did.
Sure. Batman found all the letters. So
Batman
he read
found the letters.
He read
he
all of them.
He understands that this man feels guilt, and they end up reconciling peacefully.
Yeah.
And because they're able to do that, Joe Chill doesn't inherit the mantle of Joker. I said inherent. He didn't inherit the mantle of the Joker. He ended up absolving his conscience. I can't speak today. I apologize. But he ends up absolving his guilt to a certain extent. And it's implied that he dies more or less peacefully.
Yeah.
And Batman, for the first time in his life, I mean, I say Batman, let's be honest, it's Bruce Wayne, for the first time is like kind of able to close a door and be like, I'm that part of me is done.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to, like, it's kind of interesting. They've tried to tackle this in the past when Pete Tomasi wrote Batman and Robin. Batman was like, I really want to put the vengeance part behind me and just focus on being the best Batman I can be. And I think, narratively speaking, I don't think Bruce Wayne's ever been in a position to really do that, because Joe Chill was caught, but he still failed ultimately. And I think having Joe Chill end his story the way they did, with like a meeting of the two men face to face and saying their pieces and making peace, is going to allow Bruce like a forward momentum that he could not have had any other way. And I think, narratively speaking, it's going to be incredibly interesting to see what goes on. Anyway, the Jokers are insane. and the criminal ends up, like, the clown is killed.
Yep.
Or no, excuse me, the comedian.
Comedian's killed.
No,
the clown. The criminal is killed.
No, well, the clown is killed in issue one by a Red Hood. We'll get there. And then the criminal, is he killed or does he just die?
No, he's killed. He's shot by the comedian.
That's right. Okay. And then the comedian, who again was the Killing Joke Joker, we find out may or may not have been the actual Joker the whole time. And maybe he's just making other people believe that they're also the Joker, or maybe there's always multiple Jokers, or maybe it's just nebulously the concept. It is so smart. It is so well executed. There's a concept in fandom, and I'm just preaching to the choir, I understand, but there's a concept in fandom of like headcanon. And so it gets to the point where when Batman's existed for 80 years, you as a fan, the way you identify Batman, is you take certain stories that you like, and that helps you define how you read Batman. And the way you define Batman is probably going to be very similar to how I define Batman, but the way that we understand Batman is going to be just a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Like, it maybe isn't night and day different, but maybe where, you know, you're assuming that he's going to eat a croissant for breakfast, I'm going to assume that he's going to eat buttered toast. You know, like, it's not miles and miles apart, but it is vaguely different. And when you get a room of like 100 people, and those 100 people all have 100 different versions of what their Batman is, nobody's wrong and nobody's correct.
Right. Yeah.
And the way that this book ends is it's kind of like everything you think about the Joker is completely wrong, except for the parts that are completely right. and I there's like a David Lynch kind of Twin Peaks mentality to that I think is risky, but it's incredibly smart. And if it's handled by a smart team, like we've got with Johns and Fabok and mm-hmm. the colorist Brad Anderson, if it's handled well and you have smart readers, and I honestly believe most comic book readers are smart people who understand, maybe, you know, there might be people who can't articulate it the way that I can because I'm smart and I'm good looking. but fundamentally, when you read that story, you understand on like a base level, and like the part of your brain that knows story and understands story, you accept it. Whether or not you understand it is irrelevant, because your brain is like, this is exactly how this story should have ended.
Yeah, kind of the whole point of it at the end was the Joker wanted to get rid of Joe Chill, or reconcile that.
Mm-hmm.
So that the Joker could be the primary focus of Batman. So he could cause more, he could be the sole source of pain for Batman.
And I don't want to take up too much time, because I absolutely just could, because we haven't even touched on Barbara and Jason.
Yeah.
And without going into too much detail, what we have with all of the Jokers that are in the story, what we have with Bruce, what we have with Barbara, Jason, Joe Chill, is everything that I've been talking about. It's going back to the beginning and existing now, and what counts and what doesn't count, and how do you grow and how do you change, and how does the bad stuff in your life that's happened affect who you are now and how you're going to move forward. And when you look at Joe Chill, who had nothing but remorse for that awful thing he did, you've got Joker, who's like, I want to make this, I want to be worse. I want to be the ultimate awful thing. You've got Barbara, whose pain and trauma from the past drives her to be a better person. And you've got Jason, whose pain and drama from his past drives him for vengeance. And you have Bruce, who's all of that, and yet he somehow subverts your expectation and transcends all of that stuff because his pain forces him for vengeance. He needs to be a better Batman, but he also ends up showing compassion to Joe Chill. And what on earth are comics? You know, like what this is, we've transcended the idea of a morality tale.
Well, yeah. Because he has that at the end, issue one, he has that dilemma of Jason killed the first Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. If I turn you in, then all of us get exposed.
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets to the point where Barbara's like, I don't even care anymore. What you've done is too much. You can't continue to do this. She said, I'll take my mask off in front of everybody, and I'll put myself out there to get you to stop doing this thing that's only going to tear you down on the inside. And it's so interesting. And like I said too, it's definitely a good story about trauma. And trauma is a horrible thing. And I think on some level, most people have experienced some kind of trauma.
Sure.
Maybe not like earth-shattering trauma. Or
beaten to death with a crowbar like Jason Todd.
Yeah, and maybe you weren't like, you know, shot in the spine and had to get over it. Or maybe you haven't had your parents murdered. But there's something in most people's lives that kind of... you had a pivot point.
Defining moment.
Exactly. Your life is now different forever. And based on what that thing is, it can possibly taint or define how you're going to move forward. Maybe what you're doing isn't the best, but maybe it's exactly what you needed to do right now to get where you're going. It's smart. I don't think at any point that Batman Three Jokers makes a specific judgment call as a story. There's characters who will say, because you did this, I believe this of you. But I don't think the story as a story is saying the way you react to things is good or bad. They just are how you've reacted to things. And it's up to you to define how you want to move forward.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'll be honest with you, Lee, I sat down with you today to talk about Batman Three Jokers. I had no idea I was going to connect it to trauma. I didn't have any
idea. I mean, they're like you said, they all three had trauma.
They all very much did. And like, as I'm talking to you, like all of this is coming to me. I haven't sat and like mapped all of this out. This isn't like I definitely have like a flawed view. I'm not a scholar by any means. I'm not trying to say I have all the answers when it comes to story, but what I am seeing is that this story and comics as a whole give you an outlet to talk about things. And sometimes you gotta talk about things, and sometimes you don't feel like you can talk about things.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe it sounds like pretentious, I suppose, but maybe this can help inspire people to like talk about their trauma and to try to grow past it, maybe.
Sure. Because you see three different ways that they dealt with it. You got the way Bruce Wayne dealt with it, the way Jason Todd dealt with it, and the way Barbara dealt with it.
Well, and also the way Joe Chill dealt with
Joker.
Yeah, and all of the iterations of Joker. We get to see how Commissioner Gordon deals with trauma. Like, trauma is a through line in this book.
Well, I think in the, was it the Killing Joke? That's what the Joker talks about. He says, look, we both had a bad day.
Yeah, the point of the Killing Joke, I could probably go on forever about the Killing Joke, but the Killing Joke, the whole idea is the Joker believes that if you have one bad enough day, that you will just snap and you'll go completely crazy. And what the Killing Joke proved is that that's not necessarily true. Oh, it's so good. Man, comics are so smart.
Alan Moore. I mean,
Alan Moore in the 80s had a lot to say about comics and had a lot of very interesting takes that weren't addressed at that point. And I do think that the Killing Joke laid the groundwork for being able to have something like Three Jokers and to actually, like, the Killing Joke, speaking of one-offs, the Killing Joke was never supposed to be continuity.
Yeah, and now Geoff Johns made it continuity.
Well, it was kind of brought into continuity when Gail Simone was working on, like, Birds of Prey, okay, because Barbara was in a wheelchair, and we were at a weird place in comics where, like, we don't want to have things be too dark all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's changed. That's changed a lot. But the Killing Joke, still to this day, it's a hard read, and it is great. It is very well written. It's very well drawn. Like, the story is so insanely good, but there's just, as you read the book, you know, there's a knock on the door, Barbara opens it, and she just looks, and the Joker's there in that Hawaiian shirt, yep, and he just shoots her, and
the camera, the hat, I mean.
Oh, it is, it's iconic. But not for, like, a fun reason. When you see that, you know that this is the pinnacle of humanity's capacity for evil. And it's just, like, it's just insane. Yeah. And
it's kind of interesting. Maybe you have the same thought process, but I like independents, like we were talking about, because they're fresh, they're new. They don't have to try to keep with some continuity from 70, 80 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But then something like this comes along, and it's like, well, this is perfect. You pulled some great stuff from 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Continuity in comics is equal parts the best thing and the worst thing.
Yes, there you go.
Because you could not tell this story with the same impact with, like, Black Hammer.
No.
You couldn't tell this story with
Invincible.
Invincible. Well, now you could.
Well, now you could. But it doesn't have an 80-year history.
Yeah, there's just not that kind of a gravitas to it. And you can tell those, like, you can, like, the smart thing that Jeff Lemire's done in Black Hammer, and one day we'll sit and talk about Black Hammer.
We need to do that.
We can definitely do that. But one thing that Jeff Lemire has done is he's given an idea of a history. So where you have Black Hammer's only been around 5 years, maybe, yeah, a little bit longer. He's built this whole world where you could believe that something that happened in World War II, which is a story he's told, matters to a story that's set, you know, 1,000 years in the future. And it matters now, and it matters in, like, this quantum realm, and it matters and all. And he's done, Jeff Lemire basically breaks every rule I could ever come up with for comics. He's just done the amazing. Also, side note, he's done a sequel / retelling / new telling of Sweet Tooth. And oh my buckets, it is so trippy, and it shouldn't be allowed. Like Jeff Lemire is one of the preeminent comic book creators. And he knows I exist, by the way, and it's super cool.
Humble anyway, brag.
Yeah, no, no, that is not humble. Like, no. Anyway, Lee, I could go on. But
yeah,
and
the
on.
History, like you said, it's the most, the best, and worst thing is to have 80 years of history to. But Jeff was able to pull from these iconic moments, mm-hmm, and bring back the comedian with the iconic camera. I mean, he, yeah, used that predominantly, especially in issue 3 of this, and just had that look. And pull from those traumatic moments and put some iconic characters, you know, Red Hood, Robin, whatever you want to call him, Barbara, Batgirl, and Batman all together, plus all those Jokers.
That's so smart. And Jason Fabok, I'm just going to touch on this real quick. One of my favorite selling points for the book, every single panel on every single page of every issue of this 3-issue giant-sized epic is a masterpiece. It's all, like, the best things I've ever seen. And one of the reasons that it took forever for this to come out is Geoff Johns and Jason Fabok both wanted it to be done before the first issue came out. And then COVID hit, and then, yeah, everything, you know, everything got all tangled up. But it is, it like, as Doomsday Clock got pushed back, like, almost 2 years. And every time we got that, Gary Frank was producing the best work of his career, and it was worth the wait. We still had to wait for Three Jokers, but we waited for basically all of Three Jokers, and as it's come out, Jason Fabok is still in the early steps of his career. It's not like he's a brand new artist, but he's got a long way to go ahead of him. And he is, I think this is the book that's going to define him for sure. Like, it's not his first work. It's not even the first time people are hearing of him, but this is what people are going to look at for Jason Fabok. I have nothing but like excitement for what this man's going to do with his career. Even if he decides that he's done with comics and he moves on to something else, whatever else he does, he's going to be fantastic at it.
Where do you think, speaking of the future, I guess, where can Batman fans go, or where do you think the storyline will go? Because we've got three separate kind of storylines, I guess, or because you got Batman that's settled his issues with Joe Chill. Joker's still alive, the comedian Joker. Red Hood takes off, and he tells Barbara that he would drop the Red Hood for her. And then, of course, you got Barbara.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Because in the main Batman title, it was written by James... is it Tinian Tynan? I don't know. I can't say his name, you guys. I'm sorry. James Tinian the Fourth is writing it. Jorge Jimenez is one of the main artists, and so is Gwilym March. They're doing Joker War, which was being published at the same time as Three Jokers. And it takes place in my headcanon. If you go back about like 5 minutes, 10 minutes ago, I was talking about headcanon. We don't have a definitive timeline, but the way I see it is this seems to be after Three Jokers, because we're seeing the Joker, singular, attacking Bruce Wayne and attacking him, like taking his wealth and using that wealth to like define like a Joker themed bat suit. And he's taken over Gotham, and he's attacking Barbara, and he's attacking Jason, and he's attacking everybody. It's carrying on similar themes. And it recently ended with issue 100. I think that if you have not read a Batman book ever, pick up Three Jokers and read it.
That's a good question. Do you think somebody that's never read The Killing Joke can step in and be okay and know what's going on?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you understand the concept of Batman, if you understand the concept of the Joker, if you've ever seen a TV show or heard somebody talk about or watched a cartoon or anything, and you vaguely understand kind of who Batman is, you're good. And if you don't know, come talk to me and I'll help you out. Like I can easily talk about this stuff forever.
You probably got a trade paperback of The Killing Joke or Death in the Family that you can sell them and get you up to speed.
I do. And I also have Long Halloween because it's the best book ever.
Well, we got three Jokers here. Speaking of Jokers, let's switch pivot just for a minute or two. Your opinion, best Joker, Heath Ledger or Joaquin Phoenix on screen?
Mark Hamill. Mark Hamill. I'm sorry. Kevin Conroy is my favorite Batman. Hamill is my favorite Joker.
Okay.
I will not budge on those. I'm sorry.
Ooh.
Yeah.
This might be fighting words with a listener.
That's fine. I'll fight. Yeah. I got nothing but time.
Yeah. But the whole point, I get the end, they talk about the Joker just basically says, look, I'm not going to tell anybody who you really are because I just want to torture you and keep going. And that's the whole point of the Joker is just that he just wants to constantly torture and ruin Batman's life for as long as he can. I think in the Heath Ledger, speaking of Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, he says, you know, I wouldn't know if I actually caught you, what I would do. It's like a dog chasing a car. I wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, man, I need to watch that again.
Yeah, it's good.
You guys, so the point of this podcast is that you need to go watch The Dark Knight.
it's so good.
You need to watch some Batman animated series to hear Mark Hamill. But yeah, the Joker, I mean, is iconic. He was rated in 2006 by Wizard Magazine as the first number 100 greatest villains of all time.
Lee, do you remember Wizard Magazine?
I know.
Let's talk for another hour about Wizard Magazine.
That's the 90s. I mean, that's iconic.
Man, I'm so old.
But I mean, the Joker has just been the last 80 years, and at least in the comic book world, heck, even in the movie world, he's well known and rated as just one of the most amazing villains, but he doesn't have any superpowers. He doesn't have any necessarily special abilities. He's just psychotic and crazy, initially, essentially. And he's always one step ahead. But we see at the end of Batman 3 Jokers that actually, of course, Batman has the upper hand because he lets us know that he knows where the Joker's son and wife are.
Yeah, it's there's so much potential.
What do you think they'll do anything with that down the road? Let's theorize.
Here's the thing, Lee. Yes and no.
Okay.
Like we may there might be a plan in 2021 to just pick up and do a sequel to the story. Or we maybe won't even hear about it for another 15 years. Until, you know, somebody that you and I have no idea who they are, who hasn't even written or drawn their first comic yet. Sure. It might be their job in 15, 20 years to tell that story.
Just like Geoff Johns went back to 1988 mm-hmm. and pulled some nuggets here absolutely. And made a story out of it.
So, and here's a fun fact with DC, because here we are, November of 2020. Right now, all we know for sure is with what DC's got going on right now, in January and February, the entire slate of DC books is jumping, like, I want to say, like 15 years in the future.
Oh.
And that's going to be just for a 2-month event called Future State. And that's coming out of the events in Dark Knight's Death Metal. And I'm not going to go into all of that stuff right now. But what's very interesting is in March, it's presumed that everything is going to take place now, again, quote unquote, okay. now. And I don't think we're going to get like a hard reboot like the New 52, but we're going to see a slew of new number ones. We don't know any of the creative teams. We don't know what the plots are going to be. So it's very possible that this could be on the docket for March of 2021. Or, like I said, maybe we won't find out until 2035, or maybe they'll never touch on it.
Yeah.
I am so pleased with 3 Jokers front to back as is, where like if I got more, I would take it. Yeah. And if I didn't get anything else and we find out that maybe this isn't even continuity and it's just its own thing, I'm so fine with it because Batman 3 Jokers, it's 3 issues, they're prestigious format, they're all $6.99 a piece. It's so well crafted, finely tuned storytelling, not just comics, but storytelling. It is so well done. That if we were to go into it, like if we were to do a sequel or a spinoff or to do a follow-up or to reference it later, I would be thrilled. But I don't need it.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to leave it alone.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
I agree. Well, cool, Tim. Well, let's put a pin in this. I think we've hit it pretty hard. And hopefully maybe we can revisit it, like you said, if they do look at the storyline again. If Geoff Johns does that, we'll talk about it some more.
Sure. Reach out to Lee if you have any questions for me, or you can find me. I'm at Rainbow Comics here in Lincoln, Nebraska. I'm also on Twitter. I'm at Mothe, M-O-T-H-E-E. Shoot me a message there. If you have questions, let me know. If you think I'm completely wrong, that's totally fine. Let me know. I don't mind.
If you love it, let Tim know.
Yeah, let me know. Tell Lee that you're tired of hearing from me. If you're tired of hearing from me, it feels like I'm almost an unofficial co-host at this point. But
We appreciate your insight because you give us some fun stories and interesting insight because you are the expert.
Oh man, don't put that on me. Don't put that on me at all.
Title that you want. So, well, thank you, Tim.
Thanks,
until
Lee.
Next time, we'll have to tackle another topic. It sounds like we might have a Black Hammer episode, maybe, or Jeff Lemire.
Jeff Lemire, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Definitely. If you could get Jeff Lemire, that would be super dope.
Oh, man, that'd be awesome. All right. Thanks, Tim.